Mr. Punch presents The Letters of Charlotte Bronte, abridged by Alan Drury and performed by Imogen Stubbs.
To Robert Southey, Poet Laureate, March the 16th, 1837. My father is a clergyman of limited, though competent, income, and I am the eldest of his children. He expended quite as much in my education as he could afford in justice to the rest. I thought it therefore my duty, when I left school, to become a governess. In that capacity, I find enough to occupy my thoughts all day long, and my head and hands too, without having a moment's time for one dream of the imagination. In the evenings, I confess, I do think, but I never trouble anyone else with my thoughts. I carefully avoid any appearance of preoccupation and eccentricity, which might lead those I live amongst to suspect the nature of my pursuits. Following my father's advice, who from my childhood has counselled me, just in the wise and friendly tone of your letter, I have endeavoured not only attentively to observe all the duties a woman ought to fulfil, but to feel deeply interested in them. I don't always succeed, for sometimes when I'm teaching or sewing, I would rather be reading or writing. But I try to deny myself, and my father's approbation amply rewards me for the privation. Once more, allow me to thank you with sincere gratitude. I trust I shall never more feel ambitious to see my name in print. If the wish should arise, I'll look at Southey's letter and suppress it. It is honour enough for me that I have written to him and received an answer. The signature, which you suspected of being fictitious, is my real name. Again, therefore, I must sign myself C. Bronte. To Emily Bronte, Stone Gap, June the 8th, 1839. Dearest Lavinia, I have striven hard to be pleased with my new situation. The country, the house, and the grounds are, as I have said, divine. But alack-a-day, there is such a thing as seeing all beautiful around you. Pleasant woods, winding white paths, green lawns and blue sunshiny sky, and not having a free moment or a free thought left to enjoy them in. The children are constantly with me, and more riotous, perverse, and unmanageable cubs never grew. As for correcting them, I soon quickly found that was entirely out of the question. They are to do as they like. A complaint to Mrs. Sidgwick brings only black looks upon oneself, and unjust, partial excuses to screen the children. I've tried that plan once. It succeeded so notably that I shall try it no more. I said in my last letter that Mrs. Sidgwick did not know me. I now begin to find that she does not intend to know me, that she cares nothing in the world about me except to contrive how the greatest possible quantity of labour may be squeezed out of me, and to that end she overwhelms me with oceans of needlework, yards of cambric to hem, muslin nightcaps to make, and above all things dolls to dress. I do not think she likes me at all, because I can't help being shy in such an entirely novel scene, surrounded as I have hitherto been by strange, constantly changing faces. I see now more clearly than I have ever done before that a private governess has no existence, is not considered as a living and rational being, except as connected with the wearisome duties she has to fulfil. While she is teaching the children, working for them, amusing them, it is all right. If she steals a moment for herself, she is a nuisance. Nevertheless, Mrs. Sidgwick is universally considered an amiable woman. Her manners are fussily affable. She talks a great deal, but as it seems to me, not much to the purpose. Perhaps I may like her better after a while.
Sample complete. Ready to continue?